Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's not love! That's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
No, we're back. It's been a month. Can you believe it? It doesn't really even feel like...
Has it been a month?
It has been a month.
I do apologize.
Well, we have excuses, but excuses are excuses. To me, it really, in some ways, does not feel like the season has really started yet.
Oh, the season is in full swing. That's because you're a Giants fan, and we do apologize to all the Giants fans out there.
It's gonna be a long season. No, it's not just because I'm a Giants fan. It's because I spent 2.5 weeks traveling the globe with no baseball, and I haven't been to the park yet.
Why would you punish yourself like that? Are you a masochist?
I don't know if I'm a masochist, but it was ultimately a very nice break from all things reality. It's different following baseball from Europe than it is Asia.
Oh, yeah, all the games are 3 a.m.
Well, or later. Right. Yeah, you wake up to the scores, which is kind of nice in some ways. But in Asia, the experience, I was in Singapore, and during that epic Giants-Rockies 18-inning game, that game started at 10:30 in the morning in Singapore. So I listened to a lot of it. It just went on and on and on, and finally sometime in the late afternoon it ended. But
you couldn't find a no TV had baseball. Is that what you're saying?
I didn't turn on a TV the whole trip.
Right, and I'm sure you probably couldn't have found it anyway. But
I had it on my phone. The MLB app is great. I could stream the
games. Oh, really? Even out there?
The audio. Yeah.
There's no
the audio. And the Wi-Fi is great.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, you're not in anyone's territory, right. So you're not going to get any blackouts.
That's true.
But
that's true. Interesting. So where did you go? Why have we not had an episode? What's going on here?
Well, you were gone too. But
that's right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess.
Don't
you're right.
Put this all on me.
Yeah, but I was doing some baseball research.
You were.
Right? I was in the land of baseball.
You were. Well,
outside of the Caribbean. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I went to the Netherlands. I went to Greece. I went to Israel.
You didn't see any baseball in the Netherlands? You know, I know Curaçao has, you know, that's
well, Curaçao,
of, that's
but
not
that's
locally, but
that's,
I'm assuming they have some like college or something.
They might. You know, it was such a whirlwind trip. I mean, we did 5 countries and 7 cities in 2.5 weeks.
Great.
So weren't in any spot for too long to seek those kind of things out. It was mostly rest, relaxation, a little bit of touring around, eating a lot of great food.
Nice. No, no stomach bugs.
Bugs this time. Yeah, nice. No, I had a great time. No bad meals. No strange, bad clams or anything. So that's a good thing.
Uh-oh. Was that a sexual reference? Okay.
No, it was not.
We're good. Yeah, no, it's look. We're back. I've been to 2 baseball games this year. I don't know about you.
I haven't made it to the
I thought
park
you
yet.
Were going to go to the Giants game against the Yankees yesterday, Saturday.
I thought I was going to, too, but sadly, I was not able to make it, and my ticket was given away before I could really even, like, try to make it.
Before I went abroad, I was able to catch the Red Sox get handily beaten by the A's 7-0 at the Coliseum. That was great.
That's great. A lot of fun. Sitting next to a Red Sox fan, I imagine it was even more fun.
I was winning bets. It was amazing. it was great. Plus, just to see the the distress on all the Red Sox fans' faces, which there wasn't as many Red Sox fans as there usually is, which is awesome.
Probably because
I was
really
hoping that there would
season.
Be. Yeah, because you never bet against the A's at home. Anyway, and then I'm going to the game tomorrow. Dodgers are in town. Going to go see the Giants. That'll be great. Come say hi at Section 106. I'll be there. I'll be in the probably the only guy wearing Dodgers gear because it's pretty much like season ticket holders down there. And then I went to a Henshin Tigers game at Koshin Stadium, which was fucking awesome in Japan. That's, man, going to a game in Japan is kind of like what I would imagine going to a baseball game was like here 50 years ago or something, you know, where everybody's involved. I really didn't see a lot of people on their phones, which is weird because, you know, it's everybody's
everyone's on their phone. Yeah.
Right. When you go to a game here, or at least at, you know, 18 or Oracle Park, whatever
it's called.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I get it. You know, I'm checking scores. I'm doing stuff like that too. But it was really interesting to see the wide demographic. And that's kind of like what baseball, even in America, does definitely have a wide demographic. You'll be seeing an old lady next to you. You'll see a kid. And that's pretty much exactly what it was like in Japan.
Appeals to all genders and all ages.
It really does. But what I will say is the fandom, if you could say that, the fans out there seem to be much more involved. You know, it's more akin to what I would imagine like a European soccer match. Like they have chants. They have team songs, you know. And everybody, young and old, knows every beat, every line, every inflection. And they're all in it. It's pretty great. And they even an away section out in left field for the visiting team. And they take up, you know, an entire section of seats, which is really cool.
That's very much like a college football game where they have a section for the other school.
Yeah, and they were nonstop, man. So they were playing the Dragons, and the Dragons are blue and white, and they have a cursive D, not unlike the Dodgers. So it was kind of hard for me not to root for them. But I was in the Tigers' home stadium, which was really cool. And the Tigers have been there since 1936, so they're. It's really, really cool. I tried to see a game at the Tokyo Dome, but that got foiled. There's something lost in translation there. I think I messed up that. But we were able to see the game just outside of Osaka. It's right in between Kobe and Osaka. Okay. Koshin Stadium, really cool spot.
Now, are the Tigers Japan the one that has the KFC curse on them?
What is the KFC curse?
The KFC curse is... a curse that was put on Japanese teams. I think it was the Tigers. So they had a tradition where when the team wins the championship, there's a bridge that they throw likenesses of the players that won over the bridge to celebrate. And the year that the last year that this team won, they had a foreign-born, an African-American gentleman on the team, and they didn't really have any likenesses of African-American to toss over the bridge. So what they did was they found
a statue of Colonel Sanders,
which was the closest.
Right. Yes.
They tossed him over, they haven't won since.
Yeah.
And
no, that's true. In fact, I saw a statue of the colonel at that park. That's really funny. Yeah, you are correct. It's an urban legend. Yeah. Man, that's it. It's pretty brutal, and they did get beat pretty bad that game. But, you know, the great thing was that literally bottom of the ninth, the Tigers are losing 9-2. I mean, they don't have a chance, and everybody's still there. Everybody's still screaming, chanting the songs. Like, you know, nobody's leaving. Like, they're getting destroyed, and still just as much fervor from the first pitch to the last. And I will say, one of my favorite things, besides the food, because the food was top-notch and now has permanently spoiled me from
I saw a couple of your pictures there.
Oh,
there's
man.
Some best-looking ballpark food I've ever seen.
The lady next to me is eating this bowl of ramen, a full bowl, a ceramic bowl of ramen.
Oh, wow.
So that prompted me to get up because I had my gyudon, my beef bowl. That's pretty much all I ever need, just beef, stewed onions, and rice, you know.
Sure.
A few pickles. Amazing. But then also takoyaki, which is like these fried they're not even fried. They're like, they're kind of pan fried pancake octopus balls with like green onions, a little bit of like Worcestershire cream sauce, unreal mayo. It's crazy. And then just yakitori, just fresh chicken skewers, beef skewers. I mean, everything you could possibly imagine. But the main thing, the thing that excited me the most, and I had heard was true, and sure enough was true, was the Asahi girls. The beer girls walking up and down the aisle. So you don't have to get up. That bringing is, you beer nice. On tap to your
on
seat.
On tap. That's amazing. It's just great. A big tank strapped to their back.
$5.
And a little thing.
$5. Oh, beer on tap. It's like an 18-ounce beer. It's insane.
That's great.
And they don't stop. They don't stop after the seventh inning, like a lot of American ballparks are wont to do. Again, bottom of the ninth, two outs, and they're still trying to sell beer. Fucking amazing, man. They're really civilized. Really, they really got it figured out. I don't know what the hell we're doing over here. I mean, we invented the damn game, and we just can't seem to do it right. It's all right. It's still fun here, but really, really great experience. Definitely go check out Koshin Stadium if you ever get the chance. Yeah. Or any stadium, for that matter. Really fun stuff. But there were some weird things that I didn't quite understand. No DH, which was great. Pitchers were hitting. That was cool.
That's the way it should be.
Right. But there was the bunting. Now, I don't know if... I was sitting pretty close. I had pretty good seats. But it seemed to me that you could hold your bat out even when the ball passes the plate and still not get a strike. Now, here, if you don't pull the bat back, that's a strike, right?
Right.
Even if it's a ball... If you have the bat out and you miss, that's a strike, right? But I saw a guy do it like four times. It was really weird. He was holding bunt and he never pulled the bat back, and they just kept calling ball. So, you know, and then he ended up getting a walk. It was really interesting. I don't know. And again,
maybe because he didn't make a motion towards the ball, so he didn't.
Yeah, but you still have to pull it back. And here in MLB, you still got to pull the bat.
I think so.
Yeah, you can't just leave the bat out there. You could pull it back last second, but you still got to pull it back, right? I don't know. I was about four Asahis deep. So, but I remember watching this, like, because this was like in the sixth or seventh, and I was like, what is going on out there? How is this guy not out, you know? Anyway, I don't know. A few differences. There's also all their names on the back of their jerseys are written in English or, you know, are written in English characters.
Right.
But everything on the scoreboard, who's up next, is all in Haragana, which of course I can't read. Plus, I got to convert kilometers per hour into miles per hour. That was another interesting idea. But again, incredible experience. Right. Highly recommend it.
All right, that sounds amazing. Sounds like a good time overall.
Oh man, top notch, definitely. But a lot's been going on here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have 4 weeks of baseball now to cover.
And
our last episode was published the day before opening day, right? So,
no, opening day had already started, right?
Was it?
I don't know. I think so, because I think I was going to the A's game the next day. Anyway, a few things have happened, obviously, since then, including Cody Bellinger just raking.
Yes.
And he passed Chase Utley for most total bases before May 1st. All-time major league record. Chase Utley in 2008 had 85. Cody Bellinger has 89, and they're playing right now. And April is not over yet, so...
Right, still have two more games, at least.
Could we see 100 total bases before May 1st?
I think it's certainly total possible. If he has now 2.5 games before May 1st...
Yeah, 2 home runs, he's almost there, right.
Yeah, 2 home runs, 3
and
triples.
Double. Yeah. No, I mean, all he needs is 2 home runs and a double.
Right? Which is not totally unreasonable.
No, yeah, I guess you're right. 2 home runs and a triple. Yeah, it's not, or just how about 3 home runs? I mean, the guy's raking, so I don't think that should be an issue. We also saw today, Saturday, that is, or Sunday, I guess that would be, with the bases loaded, with one out in the top of the first, Albert Pujols cranked a 2 RBI double down the left field line against Homer Bailey. Passing with that one swing of the bat, Lou Gehrig and Barry Bonds to make him third on the all-time RBI list with 1997.
Yeah. Quietly, Albert Pujols is one of the most outstanding baseball players of any generation.
Oh, certainly.
I say quietly because he spent so many years in the shadow of, well, there's Mark McGwire, Barry Bonds, that overshadowed him, you know, got better numbers, more recognition for MVP voting, all of that.
Sure.
He ultimately, I think, gets the last laugh because he has bigger overall numbers at the end. He got that monster 10-year contract with just still going. Unbelievable with the Angels. And, very talented individual. Congratulations to him.
And he did it cleanly. You know, he always did it well. He was never a bad teammate. There was never any hint of controversy with him, which is nice. But, you know, there is a bit of controversy when it comes to counting RBIs because he's technically fourth, well, I guess third on the all-time stat list because some statisticians don't count RBIs before 1920 because RBI did not become an official stat until 1920, which means that the Elias Sports Bureau doesn't count Babe Ruth or Cap Anson on that list, on the 2000 RBI club list. So even though, you know, we'll see them having reached that milestone on baseballreference.com, it's just interesting to sort of see, you know, some people count it, some people don't. I think that's ridiculous. That's really dumb. You could do it retroactively like Baseball Reference does, and I think that's the way to do it. And due to uncertain nature of record keeping in the early part of the 20th century, some discrepancies exist. You know, some people have Gehrig as having 1995, some people have him as 1994, but either way, Pujols passes him. And then if you do keep Babe on that list, which I think you should, obviously, he's second all time next to Hank Aaron at number one. And then number three, Alex Rodriguez.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, so if Pujols gets more than 2,086, he will pass Alex Rodriguez. Now, I don't know if he'll pass Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth's got 2,213, and Hank Aaron almost has 2,300. He's got 2,297, so pretty elite company, to say the least.
Yeah, well, it's pretty amazing to me, too, is that the amount of RBIs that Barry Bonds ended up with could have been far greater because of the sheer amount of walks that he was issued.
That's true.
They never in those
toward the end of his career.
Towards the end of his career, they did not pitch to him if there was anyone on base. The only time they would ever actually pitch to him is if there was no one on base.
So that
and he would never he wouldn't miss and he would just get the one RBI. And, you know, so I imagine that his ultimate career RBI total was stunted a little bit because of that.
Well, he still has time. He could still suit up, come back, and get those four RBIs to get even 2,000.
Certainly looks like he's in shape enough to be able to do that, but...
out of the cards.
He'll reset his clock for the Hall of Fame too, but you know.
Well, yeah, that might be better for him. You know?
Well, you know the Giants
have the next generation of baseball writers.
Giants seem to still be looking for a left fielder. So,
well, I know. I keep telling you, I see Barry Bonds like once a month. The guy looks pretty good.
No,
you know?
For sure.
He looks like he did in 02 or even 98. I mean, he looked kind of thinner. You know. Anyway, I don't know. Freddie Freeman, though, has got an on-base streak going. He has been on base in every game this season.
Oh, that's pretty outstanding.
Pretty damn outstanding. Now, who holds the longest on-base streak, you may ask? Or you may not.
That question was not quite at the tip of my tongue, but does make sense to ask, yes.
Now, I mean, I think most people would assume it's probably Ty Cobb. I mean, not Ty Cobb, I'm sorry, Joe DiMaggio. Right, because Joe DiMaggio has the hit streak.
Right, the 56-game hit streak, sure.
And he did put together a 74-game on-base streak around his 56-game hit streak.
And what you're saying is that that's not the record.
That is not the record. In fact, the record is 10 more games than 74. 84
games. Wow, that's...
And another...
Most of a season.
Hall of Famer.
Well...
Boston Red Sox Hall of Famer. That should narrow it down right there.
It does.
He's got the name Ball Game in his fucking name.
Yeah. that would be Mr. Williams?
That would be Mr. Ted Williams. Yeah. Yes, sir. Now, that's a hell of a streak. 84 games.
Yeah, that's most of a season.
That's half a season. It's more than half a season. It's pretty good. Could we see Freddie Freeman do it? Possibly. I mean, the guy's raking. You know, he's already...
Yeah, and since it's on halfway on base, there. It's not right. even about... getting the hits,
right?
So it's just getting on base. There can be an error, there can be a walk, there can be obviously a hit. But
speaking of we're not speaking of anything about that, but at least in the West Coast, Zach Greinke did something recently. I don't know if you saw this. Zach Greinke,
he's been having a good year so far.
Well, he's having a great year on the mound, but he's having an even better year arguably at the plate.
Yeah,
Zach Greinke hit a cycle. Huh? Zach Greinke hit a cycle? What the fuck are you talking about? For the month.
Okay.
a pitcher cycle. It's a pitcher cycle. Nobody's ever done it. So with his triple in the fifth inning against the Pirates last Thursday, Greinke became the first pitcher in baseball history to record a cycle in the opening month of the season. He has 5 extra base hits in 6 games.
Wow.
He's giving Mad Bum a run for his money in terms of that Silver Slugger award right there. I think it's his to lose at this point. Going for the cycle, man.
That might be. That might be. I know that, amid all of this talk about the DH in both leagues, the...
Goddamn disgrace!
I totally agree. The Milwaukee Brewers pitching... In the first week of the season, hitting .353, .421 and .529 to start the year.
Well, that's better first, than like, week every other batter except for Yelich on that team.
Pretty right much,
because their batting is abysmal right now, and Jesus Aguilar really needs to heat up because he has been doing terribly, and a lot of people I'm sure that drafted him kind of high. Giving his last season exploits are pretty bummed out right now. Bummed out.
Yeah.
Not unlike the Goldschmidt owners of last year. Although, of course, Goldschmidt turned it around. He has a longer track record than Jesus Aguilar. But yeah, the Brewers are still winning some games.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess it's probably because their ninth spot hitter, I guess. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it certainly was true to start the year. That was, at this point, 21 days ago, so 3 weeks ago, that was through the first, that was just the first week of the season that we're talking.
We have some old stats today. It's okay, yeah. Though. It's
We've been gone for so long that, we have stuff to
We're just recapping. We're recapping. This is more for us. I don't even know. This probably won't even be published. We'll see. It's okay. We apologize to you. But, we know you guys are all watching this. You all saw Francisco Lindor out there. He became the third youngest shortstop to reach 100 home runs behind A-Rod or Payrod and Cal Ripken Jr. So that's some pretty rare company there. And we're really glad to see Lindor back, or at least I am, and the rest of his owners out there for fantasy because... I took a bit of a chance. I got him. I mean, not really. He's the best shortstop in the game, but he was hurt, obviously, to start the year. He made his debut earlier this week, and hopefully he can continue to rake because I need a little help right now. So when are you going to go to a game? What's going on here? Do you have any plans? Don't you have season tickets? What's going on?
Well, no, I don't have season tickets per se. I do get to go to 8 to 10 games a year. My first one, I think, might be... it's coming up, I think, this week. It's either this week or the week following. But, like I said, I thought it was going to be yesterday, but that didn't, unfortunately, work out. But
are you happy with Kevin Pillar? How's that working out?
I think that ultimately was a very good move. I mean, ultimately, he is... not the most spectacular player, but when he came to the Giants, he instantly became the best hitter on the team.
Which isn't saying much. But
not saying much.
He's got
but
four
it is
home
something.
Runs, right? He's got four jacks.
He's got four home runs. He came in. He definitely made a difference. helped them win definitely a few games, and seems to have been making an impact overall with the team.
Could this be the year? Could this be the year the Giants finally have a 20 home run batter?
It's certainly possible. They, you know, they seem to be hitting more home runs on the road than at home. I think that it's purely psychological at this point.
You think so?
You know, I do. I think that, you know, Oracle Park may not be the easiest to hit home runs, but I mean,
if you're a right-hander, it's not that hard. I mean, that's a pretty short fence in the left field. I mean, I've seen Buster Posey hit some line drives out there. You know, it's not horrible. It's not like the Giants are all left-handed heavy, right? I mean,
they're not. I think
the cold air, is that what you mean?
It's the cold heavy air. The ball just doesn't carry, so you really have to get a hold of one. But
yeah.
Visiting teams that come in don't seem to have any trouble hitting home runs.
I didn't want to say that, but I'm glad you did for me. Thank you. Yes. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, Gary Sanchez in yesterday's game, that grand slam, it's just like he hit that ball.
Yeah.
He hit that ball hard.
Easy.
And it went out, no doubt. so I don't know what's going on. I think it's mostly psychological. There's a little bit of physical physics.
There's a lack of power in that lineup, maybe.
There is a lack of power in the lineup. And, you know, I don't know even if the emphasis should be on hitting home runs. I think just the...
Well, no, I know. But in this day and age where 20 home run season isn't even a big deal anymore. To have a team that hasn't had even one player for the last 5 years do it is kind of strange.
It is very strange. And it's I don't even know where it's coming from. It is very strange that
maybe you're right. Maybe there's some mental thing going on here. You know,
Yogi Berra said 90% of the game is half mental, right? So
yeah. But maybe it's the Giants. Who's the batting coach? Who's the hitting coach for the Giants? Is he not sort of preaching these new fundamentals of getting under the ball, launch angle, exit velocity? Is it possible the Giants are just going too much old school?
I don't know.
Hensley Mullins
is the Hensley Bam Bam Mullins. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
He. Yeah, I don't know what he is preaching in terms of hitting.
Now, this is interesting. He played in the MPB, in the Japanese Professional Baseball League, or the Nippon Professional Baseball League.
Right.
So maybe he is more of a contact guy. Maybe he's preaching more just string hits together. I mean, that is really what you should be teaching.
Yeah,
kind of.
Put a good swing on the ball, hit the ball hard
but
and clean.
In this era of the shift, if you're a lefty, you can't just be hitting it through the middle. Now you got to be making hard contact. You have to hit them over. You got to be getting hard hits. This is why most great hitters today don't really care about the shift, because they say, I'm going up there to make hard contact. I'm not, you know, whatever I hit should not be, the shift should not even apply, because I'm not trying to weakly hit it to the right side, you know.
Well, it seems like to me that the wall out in right field should be a major advantage for most left-handed hitters. It is not that far.
I agree.
I think unless you have power like Bonds or Harper or some of these really big boppers on the left-hand side that can easily launch the ball over that wall with regularity, I think that left-handed hitters should be focusing on just hitting a line drive off that wall.
That's
as
true.
Hard as it can be. It's an automatic double.
Yeah.
Unless
possibly a triple. Yeah.
You know, depending on where the fielders are lined up. You hit a ball off that wall, it's going to come off that wall on an unpredictable angle.
Right.
Get away, be able to get to second base. Instead of trying to hit over the wall, worrying about hitting a home run, just put dents in that brick wall.
That's true. Use your home field to your advantage.
That would be the whole point.
Right.
I mean, yeah, if you home runs, they're great. They're fun. They're exciting. But
ultimately, you know, yeah. When nobody's on base, who cares? Yeah.
No one's on base, who cares? If you know, I'd much rather see, you know, three hits in a row than a long fly out that, you know, gets caught a foot in front of the fence.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of that, there has been talk of the Giants organization bringing in the fences, getting rid of Triples Alley. What do you think about that?
I have mixed feelings about it. You know, there's to a certain extent, it makes sense to do. The other thing, I think it takes away from the uniqueness of the ballpark. 100%. No one talks about the 421 triangle out in Fenway Park being too far away.
Exactly.
But very few people hit home runs out that direction anyway.
Right.
You know, if Fenway's got the really short left field with the green monster that you got to hit, you know, super high to get out. Otherwise, it's a single off the wall. And they've got the really low fence out in right field where as long as it's, you know.
Yeah, in the bullpen,
As long as it's above 4 feet high when it gets out past the warning track, it's going to go out.
Right.
So then that triangle is 421. It's technically longer than Triples Alley.
Sure. No, I agree. I think that's the best part of that stadium. It's really cool. I like the unique factor that park brings. And that's, I think, one of the best parts about baseball or Major League Baseball in general. Unlike football or, of course, hockey or basketball or really any other sport, each park is different.
Right.
You know, they're not all uniform, which is really cool.
Right. There's no cookie-cutter stadiums anymore, exactly. Which is really nice.
Yeah, that makes for more interesting baseball. And I think it would be a damn shame if they got rid of Triples Alley. Not because, you know, I want to see the Giants not hit 20 home runs, but just because of that, it makes for interesting plays. If you're good at the game, if you're a good hitter, you can and should use that to your advantage. And if you're a good defender, that's a huge advantage right there. You know, it's kind of like at Minute Maid Park in Houston when they got rid of Towels Hill. Remember that?
I do remember that.
I missed that thing, man. That was great. So many amazing bloopers, but also highlight reel shots from way over there. I mean, you're running full speed, and all of a sudden, now your knees are in your face because you're running up a hill. All of a sudden,
right?
It's incredible. And I know it took a lot of home runs away from guys. It made a easy home run into an easy double, but still, I mean, that was a really cool aspect of that park. Like I would and watch. I used to watch more Astros game. Well, before 2017, now. Fuck the Astros, but it's okay. That park was so much more unique. That park was so much cooler when they had that Talis Hill. Now, of course, I don't have to play there, but as a fan, and isn't it all really just about the fans? I
mean, it should be.
We're paying all the damn money, right?
And it's that ballpark, the ball carries like super well in that park anyway. It was nice to have an area where if you hit the ball, it might not actually go out.
Yeah.
You could tattoo that ball, and that fence beyond that hill was so far away that, but if it lands on, say, on the top of the hill by the flagpole that was there, you know, you're fast enough, it's possible to get around for a home run anyway.
Yeah, pretty much a triple. That's like Triple Alley right there, more or less, you know, that 30-foot incline, 90-foot wide little hill up there. I mean, man, that was cool. And we don't see anything like that anymore. And I'm assuming in the future, these new parks, you're not going to have any quirks like that. It's going to be pretty straightforward, I would imagine. And now there's so much technology statistics and statisticians looking at all this stuff. What's, you know, the Texas Rangers are getting a new park next year, and I'm sure they have people just looking at the numbers. How can we maximize our wins? How can we make this park to our advantage? And I know there are people much, much smarter than me figuring that out. But to a layman, it seems that you know, I mean, if you give yourself more of a chance to get runs, then the other team's going to get runs too. I think the best thing to be would be have some sort of weird peculiarity, some sort of weird anomaly like that, where you can play 81 games and you can get that advantage on a defensive side. To me, that seems like a lot more of an advantage than really anything else I could think of in terms of, you know, how you can make it for yourself. I don't know. How you can give your team an advantage. I don't know. I don't know. Because if you have an offensive advantage, then the other team does too, whoever's visiting, right?
Right. That would seem so.
Anyway, no. I'd like to see, although I don't really have a dog in that fight with the Giants, I do go to at least a few games a year because I live here.
But, you live here, yeah, and that's the closest place to go. And it's National League West, right. So your favorite team right. does come in quite often. And
right. We always those, seem to end it here as
the,
well, too.
The, yeah. Those are the most fun games to go to because the history between the two teams and everything is just it's just a lot of fun to go to a Giants-Dodgers game. If you've never been, go. Well, I don't care if it's down in Chavez Ravine or here at Oracle Park. They're just fun games to go to.
They are.
They're always...
I have mixed feelings.
It's just as contentious on the field as it is in the stands a lot of times.
Fancy. How fancy.
It's true. Now, did you see this Yankees-Angels 14-inning game? I mean, this happened like a week ago, but there was a lot of crazy things going on in that game. But
I saw parts of it. I saw the highlights. It was pretty amazing. The Yankees mounted a pretty impressive comeback in that game.
It was a strange game. A lot of like weird anomalies were happening. But I think one of the weirdest things was Gleyber Torres did something in that game that's virtually impossible. He led off the fourth inning by striking out. Okay, yet he still scored the winning run. How? How did that happen? it was part of one of those things,
a wild pitch, and made it right. to first base on a strikeout, and
and it was a part of the first four strikeout 14th inning in baseball history. But that's not even the strangest part. Okay, thanks to a wild pitch on his strikeout, a stolen base, and Mike Ford's RBI single, this became the first extra inning ever in which a team struck out four times and still scored. Pretty crazy. Weird stuff. A lot of weird stuff was happening in that game.
Yeah, no, it is definitely odd.
Now, the Giants broke their streak. Now, it wasn't a good streak to have.
No, this...
this weekend, they finally...
Finally broke through. Yes, is this? I imagine this was this one I had for a candidate for an ignoble award of the week.
I wasn't gonna. As much as I'd like to give it to them, there's another team that deserves it. But we'll get to that in a second.
it was quite a dubious streak. The most consecutive games to start a season without scoring a run in the first inning.
Now that is really hard to do, considering, and we've talked about this a lot. How the first inning is the highest scoring inning in baseball.
Right.
By far.
Right.
Yet the Giants didn't get one run in the first 25 games?
Not a single run. It took them 26 games to score a run in the first inning.
Has any team ever gone through the entire month of April without scoring in the first inning ever once?
I don't believe so, but one team definitely did come very close.
Well, no, according to Benji Gill, according to Stats LLC, Benji Gill's 1993 Rangers did it, but they're the only team ever to do it in an April, which they played at least 20 games. In other words, no National League team has ever done it.
Oh, right, no National League team. I mean, and it was interesting about that 93 Rangers team that streak was only 21 games, so it was back in 93. They started a little bit later in April,
right.
And they weren't starting at what is it, March 28th this year?
Yeah.
So 21 games, and that's the lowest number on the list that I found of consecutive.
But even leaving out the whole calendar aspect, has any team gone 25 games or more into a season without scoring a hit in the first inning?
Well, yes, at least the record for that.
No NL team has
that. No NL team. No, right. no National League team. But one other team was the 1948 Chicago White Sox.
That's right.
28 straight games. It was really, really looking like the Giants were going to do it. But fortunately, they were able to score in the first inning against the Yankees on Friday.
And just as a quick aside, all teams not named the Giants have now scored 371 runs in the first inning this year, while the Giants, of course, have scored none. But that was a day ago, so
right.
You know, you could obviously add that. Giants got one or two against on Friday against the Yankees. Was it one in the first? Giants got I know Yankees got two. Anyway, doesn't matter. It's over, so now you can rest a little easier. And as we were speaking, Cody Bellinger just hit a home run, which will bring his total bases now up to 93. So, hey, he's seven away now.
Seven away.
Pretty damn. And I believe now he's tied for MLB and with 14 with Christian Yelich, who actually left the game early today.
Really?
The Mets game. I was watching that game, yeah.
Oh, that's not good.
He left in the fifth with lower back discomfort.
Ooh.
So
that's not good. That'll affect the swing.
Yeah, and he's probably watching Cody Bellinger just get his 14th home run. He's probably like, damn, I should have stayed in that game.
There's probably a little bit of a sigh of relief coming from St. Louis when that happened, I imagine.
Well, too. Speaking of St. Louis, that brings us to our Ig Nobel Award of the Week.
Ah, the Cardinals get it this week, huh?
I like that transition. I like that. Yeah, well,
that's okay. Very good.
Okay. On opening day, it was Brewers pitcher Julius Chacin, and you were talking about this earlier, the Brewers pitcher's hitting, that homered against the Cardinals. On April 11th and April 17th, Michael Wacha served up long balls to Dodger pitcher Walker Buehler and Brewers reliever Aaron Wilkerson. Two starts in a row. Then, last Sunday, Mets pitcher Noah Syndergaard hit a home run in St. Louis. So, that's four home runs allowed by the Cardinals to pitchers in the first 25 games of the season. Nah, of course you don't see that a whole lot. And according to baseballreference.com, it hasn't been done since 1941.
Wow.
Yeah. The Cardinals have allowed homers to four different pitchers, and that has never happened.
Yeah.
Actually, because it happened in 1941, the Phillies gave up four to Vern Olson, Bill Lee, and two to Wes Farrell. So that was only three different players, but no team has ever given up to four different pitchers within the first 25 games. So there you go, Cardinals. And Yelich was just destroying the Cardinals.
Oh, he became the first player ever to hit a home run in six consecutive games against the Cardinals.
Wow, there.
And the Cardinals have a very long and rich history, and no player has ever hit a home run in six consecutive games against them.
That's pretty tough. They're having a little bit of a rough start, but it's not too bad. They're not they're not terrible. They are still in first place after all.
Yeah.
Which is kind of strange considering all these ignoble feats. But hey, you know, it doesn't matter. It only matters how you come out at the end, right?
Right. April doesn't matter. Record at the end of April does not matter nearly as much as the record at the end of September.
Now, I was going to lump in another Cardinals pitcher in that ignoble award, and that would be Alex Reyes, who, of course, has been highly touted for the last few years. Came up last year. And then, like, immediately was, like, injured. I mean, I know because I had him on my team and I was hoping for good things. And now he, after a 2 2/3 inning start at AAA Memphis on Thursday, he punched a wall and broke his pinky. Come on, Alex. What are you doing? Now, it was on his non-pitching hand, so he didn't make the,
Hunter Strickland.
It wasn't that bad, but it's still pretty bad. So he's going to be out at least 3 weeks and at least a month until he can even be considered to return to St. Louis. So come on, bro. What are you doing? You've been fraught with injuries for the last like 2-3 years. You're going to give a self-imposed one? So I'm going to lump that into just Cardinals ignobility.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Now, I was having a conversation with my girlfriend recently about, because I was watching we somehow got down this YouTube spiral. Well, I did. She was just along for the ride, as usually happens.
She just seemed to be here at the time.
Right. She, you know, because she's very new to the game. I mean, pretty much, you know, baseball is at once the simplest sport, right? But also one of the most convoluted and detail-oriented sports, right? There's only a few rules, right? Hit the ball, run, come home. But within that,
catch the ball,
hit the ball, catch the ball, throw the ball. That's it. But there's a lot going on, right? And there's a lot of rules that if you're watching a game with somebody who doesn't really know the rules, you can end up be talking the entire game because and then this is happening. Oh, and then you see he's got two strikes, so he got a foul ball, so he's not a strike. He's not going to strike out. Blah 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 blah. It's a lot going on, right? So anyway, we're watching these managers get ejected, right? Which is always fun to watch.
Oh yeah.
And she was like, "I never seen that before," you know. And then I'm trying to explain the whole thing, what's going on. You know, the manager has to go out to defend his team and blah blah blah. You know, all that stuff. So we're just watching all these old videos of guys scream because, you know, a lot of people, casual viewers of baseball, think it's a very docile, slow, kind of peaceful sport, but there is a lot of tension going on.
Oh yeah, there's this competition runs
a lot. Yeah, exactly. So if you've never seen it, you see like these older men screaming at each other at the top of their lungs.
Lou Piniella was one of my favorites to watch.
Well, okay, so that actually brings me to there is a bit of a race brewing right now for all-time manager ejections. For active managers.
For active managers. All right.
Yeah, Ron Gardenhire and one Bruce Bochy. They came into this season, 2019, locked in a tight race. Then last weekend in Chicago, Ron Gardenhire did something to distance himself a little bit more from Bruce Bochy. He got thrown out of the 78th game. And
wow.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Now, that changes the standings a little bit here. Wait, what was that?
Well, so what did he do to actually get ejected in this?
You know, told the umpire to go shove up his ass. I don't know. You know, the typical stuff. But so Ron Garnett, for active managers at least, that would make 78 for Ron now. And Bruce Bochy has 75. So we know that, of course, Bruce Bochy will be retiring at the end of the season. So can he do it? Can he just get four more?
Well, he did get one earlier this year in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I imagine it's possible. I mean, this season is going to be long and trying enough that I imagine he'll get up a few times to argue a point.
I'm sure you're right. And it might even happen tomorrow against the Dodgers. Who knows? I mean, it's going to be a heated battle, I'm sure. Now, 78 and 75, respectively, is pretty good. But when you consider the all-time manager ejection list, that's not even combined, it's not even number one. Can you guess number one? And it is not Tony La Russa. Wait, is that who you said?
No. Lou Piniella was the one that I really enjoyed. He was so animated in the kicking of the
he's
dirt
on the list. Yeah,
and
yeah.
The throwing of the hat and the and just
pointing at the base. Yeah, yeah. He's not even in the top three. Actually,
I wouldn't be too surprised. No, I would have to say it would be someone like Connie Mack or. You know, one of these old-time, long-time managers.
Connie Mack was, you know, he'd wear a suit and tie. He was a little bit more, I'm sure he's on that list, but top three, he's not on that list. Number three, though, would be the great Earl Weaver.
Earl Weaver,
Earl Weaver was great.
Is Sparky Anderson on that list?
He is, but not in the top three.
Okay.
Number two would be Big John McGraw with 132.
Then McGraw would be out. He managed the Giants for a long time.
Yeah. Now, and he had the record for 70 years until this guy at number one got his 132nd on August 14th, 2007.
Not too long ago. Okay.
This is not the trivia question, but that would be Mr. Bobby Cox.
Ah, yes. Bobby
and he ended
Cox.
Up destroying that record. Now he has 161.
161, wow.
Yeah, or 158, depending on the source, but it's minimum 158.
You know, maybe it's because I didn't watch a whole lot of Braves, but I don't...
Well, you did, though, because they were in the same division for a while there, right?
They were, but I just don't remember him being
That's true. He's not the first guy you think of,
yeah,
right?
No, it was not. I don't think I would have. I mean, he managed for a long time, had a very good managerial career, but I don't remember so many highlights. Maybe because he was more subtle about it than Lou or some of these other guys who would come and just steam would be coming out of their ears and animated. Maybe that's why he got thrown out and he would just come out and have a calm. He insulted them very quietly instead of
just chirping from the bench. Maybe, yeah, yeah,
or perhaps
because I always think of the legendary tirades between like Earl Weaver, who was like 5'6", you know, going up against these giant umpires. So a little treat here, and I do apologize for the audio is probably terrible, but this is Earl Weaver going up against 6'3" Bill Haller.
You run yourself, Earl. You run yourself.
You hit me?
Yeah, because you good. Put your finger on good. Me.
I'm glad you hit me.
That's right. You're here for one goddamn specific reason.
What's that, Earl?
To fuck us.
Ah, you're full of shit. Fuck you.
Goddamn years and years. And don't you ever put your finger on me again.
You hit me, Earl.
You put your finger on me.
That's okay. You ain't gonna knock nobody on his ass.
You do it again and I'll knock you right in your nose.
I didn't touch you.
You pushed your finger.
I did not. No, you're lying.
God damn it.
You're lying.
No, you are.
You are lying.
You're a big liar if you
can't. You are a liar, Earl.
You are
a liar.
You are.
That's fantastic audio. Good. That's so that's reminiscent of the conversation that was captured at Citi Field. I think it was a playoff game.
Oh, yeah. Our ass is the jackpot. That was like the title of one of our episodes. Our ass is in the jackpot. I like that. You're out here for one reason and one reason only. What's that, Earl?
To fuck us.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. I actually just saw Rick Renteria get thrown out of the White Sox game earlier today. It's funny. I was just watching that game. Had some skin on that one. And it was interesting. Jose Abreu struck out. The ball was dropped. And he ran to first. The catcher threw the ball, hit Abreu in the back. And the ump immediately calls him out. And so, you know, Renteria comes running out. Screaming, you know. It was pretty great. But I guess the whole thing is he was inside. He wasn't on the grass. He was running on the dirt, but he was on the inside of the line. And I guess you have to run.
Well, that box, that second line to the foul side of the line. That is the runner's
that's the base
lane.
Path.
That is the runner's lane. The runner needs to be in that box, and then if he gets hit with the ball, he's safe. But if he is on the fair side of that line, not in the box, the ball hits him, it's interference on the runner because he's not where he's supposed to be. It's designed so that the catcher has a clear lane to throw the ball to first base from home.
Makes sense. And especially a big guy like Abreu, you know.
Yeah.
Abreu didn't argue, but Renteria came out huffing and puffing. It was pretty funny. But it's still, you know, that's something that I hope we'll never get rid of. We'll see that. And that's, you know, well, nowadays with the instant replay and everything. I mean, I was watching a Dodger game on Saturday and yesterday, and the umpire at first base made 3 bad calls in a row. Now, they reviewed the first one, and it wasn't even close, and he looked kind of dumb. Then the next inning, again, he makes the wrong call. They review it. It gets overturned. And then in that same inning, another one gets he calls out when actually the foot was off the bag. And I feel like on that one, they just gave it to him because like they're like, this guy's going to like, you know, harikari himself at the end of this one. He's going to have to kill himself, fall on his sword if he blows 3 calls in one game in 2 innings. So they didn't overturn that third one. But if you watch it, it was pretty bad. And he was a young ump, and you were talking about
right. There's a study, but that I found that talked about how the younger umps make less mistakes than the older. But that was in reference to
balls and strikes
behind the plate.
Interesting. I mean, you would assume so, just based on the you know, the age of their eyes and their ears. Because a lot of times at first base, you're really just listening, right? I mean, you're watching and listening, but
right. Generally, what I was taught when my short stint umpiring Little League was that you watch the bag and listen for the ball to hit the glove, the first baseman.
Interesting.
And that's how you.
I might have thought it was like the other way around, but I guess that makes more sense.
You're gonna hear the ball hit the glove more than you're gonna hear the foot hit the bag. So you watch for when the foot hits the bag as compared to when you hear the ball hit the glove.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I mean, you know, for a little leaguer especially, because they're the only weigh like 60 pounds, but you know, a major league player, they're gonna have a bit of a heavier foot, but I'm assuming it's the same in the major league.
It's still that ball hitting the glove is an unmistakable sound.
Now, did you are you following Joe Panic at all?
Am I following Joe Panic at all? And it turns that I've been following the Giants, yes.
Right.
But
now I could have used this as the Ignoble Award.
There's a lot of Giants this year that have
qualified
Ignoble Award nominees. There's no doubt.
No, but it kind of has a happy ending, I guess, to an extent. It's just one of those weird baseball things. Oh, you know, just baseball. It's just always so weird how this happens. And this seemed to happen a lot last year. But so it's not just Joe Panic, but it's Eric Sogard and Joe Panic had the longest homerless streaks by non-pitchers in the big leagues. Eric Sogard had 311 at-bats. Joe Panic had 240. Joe Panic's goes back to last June 30th of 2018. And Sogard hadn't homered since June 8th of 2017. And then what happened on April 23rd? Yeah, they both hit a home run. The same day, same game. Pretty interesting, though. But that just sort of goes. That's pretty hard to believe, though. I didn't realize Joe Panic didn't hit that many. I mean, that few home runs. Like,
yeah, I think the expectations got to him last year after hitting those two solo shots to win the game against the Dodgers the first two games of the season.
I think you're right. He had two and done. He's like, all right, I'm done. I did my job. Oh, man. Some quick injury updates. Brad Ausmus, manager of the Angels, said Sunday that Ohtani will not be back during the Angels' upcoming home series against the Blue Jays. He's still hitting in simulated games with an early return date, hopefully in May. Robinson Cano exited today during the game, Sunday, after getting hit by an 88-mile-an-hour Gio Gonzalez fastball on the wrist. X-rays initially came back negative, but his hand is still swollen pretty bad. And J.D. Martinez, back spasms. He's sitting out, again, 2 days in a row. I'm getting kind of nervous there because, you know, as a J.D. owner, I mean, I knew he wasn't going to have the same season he had last year. But, you know, when in fantasy, we all like to hope, you know.
Hope springs eternal.
People that picked up Yelich, the top five, top three even, aren't looking so dumb now. And Bellinger, Jesus.
Yeah.
I didn't have a chance to get him. He was already gone my second time around, but still, you know, killing it. Killing the game.
Yeah, he's on a pace to rival Bonds this year if he can keep that up.
That's true. All right. Is that going to bring us to trivia question? Last week's trivia question?
I think it may.
Last month's trivia.
Last episode's. But it was last month, yes.
Oh, man.
We'll be back sooner this time, we promise.
How do you sleep at night?
Yeah. Last week's trivia question. Who was the first 40-year-old with a 100 RBI season?
We had enough time. People had a lot of time to think about this one, ponder it, look it over, but... it's an interesting thought. The first player over 40 seems like it's a very recent phenomenon that players are even playing into their 40s. So it has to be someone
you may
fairly
think so,
recent.
But I don't know, man. It seems like players used to play maybe even longer. But maybe players didn't get hurt as much. Now, maybe that's just because I'm alive. But it seems like guys get hurt so much more now than they ever used to. And that brings me to my theory. It's, I have no degree in physiology. I'm not a smart man. But it seems like perhaps guys are working out too much. Is that possible? Is it possible that just everybody's jacked, everybody's yoked, everybody's trying to get bulky and big? And I mean, this is a finesse sport.
Well, it is. I mean, there's been an argument, you know, recently that, you know, kids starting to specialize in one sport are more prone to injuries because they're using only one set of muscles. Where,
sure,
you know, playing just baseball, just football, as opposed to a range of sports. When you play baseball in the spring and summer, football in the fall and winter, maybe a little bit basketball here and there, you're working different muscle groups, you're using muscles as they develop. Maybe there's something to that. Working out too much,
yeah,
I don't know. But there was a day, there was a time and day where, you know, the ball players in the off season would have to get a job,
right,
and probably be some sort of physical labor of some point. You know, there are different muscle groups being used in different ways than that, but
that's possible. It just seems weird. It seems like, you know, we'll never see another 30-game winner. Not that I care about wins, but just guys aren't getting 45 starts like they used to, you know?
Right.
Because they just, and it doesn't seem like guys retired super early, you know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s.
You know, traditionally the retirement age be mid-30s.
I mean, maybe the competition is, you know, there's more competition now. Maybe, you know, the minor leagues are a lot bigger than they used to be. There's always a guy that can throw 99 coming up right behind you. So maybe you feel the need to overexert yourself. I don't know. I get, but the bottom line is, you know, yeah, some guys play longer, but I'd like to see the numbers on this, like average wise, how many guys are playing into the 40s now, whereas before, because it's still pretty rare nowadays.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not
unless you're Ichiro, unless you're like a robot, you know. But
yeah, I mean, the health is a blessing, and the longer it lasts, the better off you're going to be.
But, you know, I wonder if Ichiro was trying to just bulk. I mean, he's pretty much has the exact same body he had in 2000, right? I mean, kind of looks like he's got a little bit more gray hair, you know? Maybe a slight, a few more indented wrinkles, but that's about it. I mean, the guy looks like he's 26, or at least he has the body of that. And he rarely ever spent time on the DL or on the IL, you know? So, I don't know. That's just my casual layman
observation.
Yeah. So, but anyway, who was the first 40-year-old with a 100 RBI season? We got Mike in Santa Ana says David Ortiz. Ooh, that's actually a good guess. You
not
know,
bad.
In 2016, David Ortiz did lead the league in RBIs. He had 127 that year.
Yeah.
Jesus. You remember that? Yeah, that was a crazy.
Yeah, that was, it was,
that was like
pretty impressive.
That was a pretty good walk, or final walk year, I guess you could say. Yeah.
Retirement year.
So, yes, he did hit 100 RBIs, but he was not the first, and he was 40 years old that year. Not the first. Lawrence in Arabia. I don't know if he's in Arabia, but. Says Ty Cobb. Now, this is interesting because Ty Cobb did play in 1927. He was 40 years old. And he posted the sixth best batting average, hitting .357 that year. And he did have 93 RBIs that year, but not 100.
So that's a really good guess. But
So we have one new,
short.
One old, right?
Yeah.
And I doubt David Ortiz hit .357 that year, but you know. But I'll double check on that. So no winners.
No winners. All right. Well,
what do you think? Do you have an answer for me?
Well, I, you know, my guess, you know, would have been, you know, somewhere, you know, I know I didn't have the right answer, but, you know, I was thinking about someone who would have played in maybe the 90s, early 2000s.
You're getting close. Not Barry Bonds? You weren't thinking Barry? Was he 40 or was he 39 when he retired?
I was 42 when I retired.
Yeah.
I could have guessed Barry Bonds, but he wasn't.
Wouldn't have been the first.
Wouldn't have been the first. I can't, you know, I do know the answer. It's not what I would have guessed. But, I had no idea.
In 1992, for the Toronto Blue Jays, Mr. Dave Winfield.
Big Dave.
Big Dave. He did
it. He was phenomenal.
He was 40 in 1992. That's pretty crazy. Does that make you feel old?
A little bit. In 1992, I was just beginning high school, so yeah, it does. It does put a does put a little bit of a damper on the way that I feel.
It's all right. But, no winners, no chicken dinners, and you know, we do apologize for the long stretch, but here we go. This week's trivia question. Who led his league in RBIs in 2014 while batting second? Ooh.
Wow.
Not easy to do, batting second.
Not easy to do, batting second. You have to have a good leadoff hitter or, you know,
great leadoff.
Ninth place hitter?
Possibly. It'd be hard to lead the league, though, I guess. Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. Oh, so I see what you're doing. American League. Okay. All right. Unless you got Zach Greinke pitching 5 days a week, but I doubt that's going to happen.
Not everyone has Zach Greinke, and Zach Greinke does not pitch every day.
All righty. Until next time. Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com.
Visit us at the Podomatic website.
iTunes. Leave your answer. Leave a comment.
We also got Facebook, West Coast Bias Baseball.
Hit us up.
Yeah. I am Samuel Paul.
I am Adam Nelson.
And remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.